You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
It is the Anfield wrap after Liverpool have qualified for the Champions League. Going into next season, the Reds getting the result that they needed against Crystal Palace. It didn't matter what happened elsewhere, but it was obviously funny that the other two sides we were going up against got beat. In front of me, I've got Ian Salmon, who was at the match yesterday, Neil Jones, who was at the match yesterday, and Rob Gutman, who, like me, was in a bar yesterday. We will be piecing together our experiences of all of that. We'll be talking about that Champions League qualification. We'll be talking about Gini Wijnaldum, and obviously we'll be talking about the game in general, but we'll start off with what it was like, and I'll bring Ian in after Neil. I've been speaking to Neil on and off through the season and speaking to other people who cover Liverpool in the ground, and it might feel for us as outsiders as though they're the ones who've been the lucky ones because they've been able to get in the ground and watch the football, but there's not a single person who covers Liverpool that I've spoken to who's had a nice time. So my first question for Neil when I saw him today was, how was it? So I'll ask it now in front of you, the listeners. Was it markedly better with the 10,000 in, Neil?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got to be careful, haven't you? I have anyway, because it's like moaning, isn't it? That you know you only won the lottery and you didn't you only got five numbers in the bonus ball. You didn't get all six. When you're sort of saying, "Wow, you know, it's horrible going to Anfield and having to, you know, getting paid to watch football, and while everyone else is sort of desperate to get back inside there and cheer the team on." So you have to be careful, but it hasn't felt like that much of a privilege, to be honest, this season, and not just because of the football. Even at the back end of last season, when you were sort of Liverpool were champions and they were going to win the league and that kind of thing, there's a guilt. I think I had the guilt, especially when the night that they lifted the trophy, where you're like, well, you know, it's great. Yeah, I'm inside Anfield. They're going to lift the trophy, but you just think of all the people who,
yeah,
they should have been there and wanted to be there and aren't there, and you know. There's been that. Then there's been the fact that the football's been dire, you know. And I don't just mean from a Liverpool perspective. I think league wide, it's been poor and affected clearly by it. And then you've got what is there actually to sort of say about it? You know, most of the best stuff that you write comes in an emotional state. It comes in some sort of I don't know, where you sort of. You're looking around and seeing the faces, or you're seeing the colour, the banners, that you're hearing the songs, or there's a moment where
you feel the momentum, don't you?
Yeah,
from the crowd,
yeah. You know,
yeah.
You think of Barcelona. You know, just as an obvious example, that's great. Obviously, the football and the achievement is great, but so much more about of it is something else. So it's Suarez getting booed. The celebration, the pictures or the faces of the players, it's Jürgen taking the whole team to the cop and playing that. It's, you know, it's just all of the other stuff that isn't the football and isn't the sort of what do you call it?
The kicking the ball. Yeah.
Yeah, the sport. So I think to lose all that has been tough, I think, even from a personal perspective. And to have it back, we had it briefly, didn't we, before Christmas, which was, you know, prior to probably the week. Probably the last week, the best moment was probably Firmino scoring against Tottenham and winning it in front of fans, and then obviously you get to end the season like that. So yeah, it was a different experience and a much, much, much better experience as a reporter in the stadium, definitely.
How was it for you, Ian? Obviously it's strange, you know, I presume you weren't in your usual seat. Most people weren't. On top of that, there's the staged of getting in at different times and all of that sort of stuff, but there must also have been almost a slightly weird factor to it as well. You go into this place that's normally absolutely crammed to the rafters, and it isn't. All the stuff and the noise of that's not quite there, but it must have felt like a real privilege to be in there with 9,999 other Liverpool supporters. It must have felt great.
Yeah, it was fantastic. I mean, it is all the above. I wasn't in my usual seats when
when the email came through saying I'd been lucky in the ballots, you were given the choice of seats. I tried to get my own seat. I tried to get the seat in front of my own seat. I thought about the cop, and then I thought, well, I just want to see it from where I sit. Get the main stand. Main stand, yeah. So lower main stand towards the cop end. And because it's my dad's old seat, basically where my dad's old seat was in the old main stand, I wanted to see it from there. I wanted that to be... But I couldn't, so I thought, well, I'll do the cop block 103. So I had to be there between 2:45 and 3:15, which doesn't sit well with me because I like to walk into the match, as You'll Never Walk Alone starts. I don't like waiting for things. So sitting in a cold, half-empty cop, waiting for things to happen wasn't the best start. But again, you know, you complained about that, the privilege of actually being there.
Of course.
Could you go on the concourse and have a bevy?
I don't think they were serving any alcohol, yeah. But I don't drink at the match anyway.
They were open in the main stand, yeah. The stalls were open in the main stand. Yeah.
They were giving away coffee and cold drinks until half time, at which point there were no hot drinks left. I'm not sure exactly how that works, not having any hot drinks.
It was freezing, wasn't it?
It was bloody freezing.
For the last game of the season.
I didn't realise how cold and wet it was. Well, I realised how cold it was, but I didn't realise it was raining until I came outside. Yeah. And it was absolutely biblical. And you think, have they been playing in that? Or how long have they been playing in that? But there's that thing where you've got a couple of seats either side, and obviously there are people around you who are sitting with people they know, but I'm sat on my own, so there isn't that kind of conversation. Yeah. I had a conversation with a lad in front of me when a lot of the ground that was in at the time applauded Roy Hodgson leaving the pitch after his press media duties were over, which they're nicer people than me, that's all I can say. They're much more gracious, much more forgiving. Do you know what? It was too many. I thought there might be some, but there was quite a substantial round of applause. And I just found that very odd. It was kind of like, don't you remember? Or are you just that much nicer than I am? And I read James Pearce's article in The Athletic again and thought, no, you just don't remember, do you? No, you're just nicer than me. But as soon as you came to like half an hour before kickoff and song started, and it was the old tradition of all the individual players getting the song beforehand, and so stuff that you're not seeing on the TV for that started to feel like a game.
Yeah.
And the fact that you could hear the lads actually starting the song immediately behind me, suddenly there was that feeling of almost normal, and you could look around and see packs of people that, if you look towards the far end of the main stand down the Annie Road end, it looked like it was full, just on that angle where it looked like there were a lot of people. And you could kid yourself that it was normal. But the biggest thing was to be there on the day that after this appalling season, we've managed to end up in third place. And, you know, 3 weeks ago on a team talk, I was saying fourth is over. Don't talk about fourth anymore. It's not happening. And I was right. Just not in the way I thought it was going to be. So to be there on the day that they qualified and to feel calm, because it was a little shaky, you know, when we talk about the game later, it was a little shaky start, but you never felt troubled like you do on telly. It didn't feel... I wasn't worried. I was always confident that, you know, this sounds good. Standing on the cop, which I haven't done since I moved to the main stand 7 years ago, I haven't stood on the cop. But standing on the cop, and that's another thing, was standing on the cop, I'm 57 and my legs hurt. And again, first world problems on that one, so everyone listening. But standing on the cop and seeing the shape of the game from behind, which you don't see on telly, I very rarely see in the game, you see a different shape. But seeing the shape from behind, you're like, this isn't a problem. This is not going to be a problem. We're going to do this. It won't matter.
It felt all the way through, Rob, with the one exception of the Townsend chance. Yeah. It felt like Liverpool were in control of it all the way through as a game. It felt like they knew that they had it in the back pocket. We'll go through the phases of the game in a minute or two. Did you feel like that all the way through watching it? Because I actually felt businesslike. I was doing the hot mic and I was talking about it. I feel like this is just a bit of business that they need to finish off. They've done the difficult parts now. They're going to get this done. And I had a real certainty around it. And as the goals were going in elsewhere, it just sort of doubled down for me that Liverpool were the ones who were in control, who were masters of their own fate.
I can't be sanguine when so much is at stake. When I heard Leicester, they took the lead in their game. That was the first goal of the games, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I did.
But you're hearing that live on TV, aren't you?
Yeah, they're bringing it up on the TV as you're watching.
Because it wasn't like there was a ripple going around the ground at that point, right? There was no...
No.
It's not like...
It was like the
City game. No, it was like just ignored everything.
Well, it very, very much was. And I mean, you know, I was watching with Steve Graves, and he's a calm man, right? But I was going, this is, I was trying to convince Steve how this wasn't good.
We're trying to ruin Steve's afternoon.
I want somebody to feel as nervous as I was. I managed to do it to my boys, imbued it in them, but Steve was going to be fine. He's just going to be fine. Okay, thanks, Steve. It'll be fine. But I don't worry. We did start slowly. There's no getting away from it. I mean, you know, Saha skins Phillips. I mean, it's a brilliant piece of skill.
Yeah, should pull it back.
Yeah, should pull it back.
I think he was offside, though, wasn't
he? He was offside. I raged for about five.
You get that benefit on the telly, don't you? You go, it's okay. Whereas but they the stand, they're like, oh, my God.
And the game didn't stop, obviously. I was fuming at VAR and the whole concept of the new thing. That was a classic example. And then Townsend's free kick, which Alisson says. And then you think, I never get twitchy about a bad start by Liverpool, because football is always comes in waves. I think if you have a bad, in fact, sometimes I think it's quite good to have a not very clever first 5 minutes. You know what I mean? Whereas as long as you don't concede and you don't look desperate, just to not have enough of the ball in the first 5 minutes is not a problem. It just then gives you a chance. You go, okay, it's like a box. They've thrown a few couple of punches at you, didn't come anywhere near. Now you can take a breath and go at them. And I sort of felt once we got the Townsend, we almost had to get the Townsend chance out of the way to sort of wake us up, I thought. I mean, didn't want that to happen, but I thought once he'd missed that, I thought it'll be okay now, because they won't let that happen again in a hurry.
And it also feels like 3 months ago that goes in, doesn't it? And all of a sudden it's like, this game's over almost, you know, the idea of winning it, you know, scoring two at Anfield not so long ago is it? You know, it wasn't happening, was it? So I do think that it was a sort of, you know, Palace was strangely possession based, weren't they, for the sort of first 10 minutes? Not Roy Hodgson side. This
they were having a go.
Yeah, they had a go, but I do think that it was almost like Liverpool sort of were like, that was their moment, right? Let's just gradually take control of the game.
Yeah, I think Sadio's turn sort of galvanises us, doesn't he? Mm.
I think within the game, I've just double checked and I am right. There's the Townsend chance.
Yeah.
On what 14.
Minute? Right.
And then they don't have another shot until after 85.
That's
why around the time when it was going 1-0, Neil, it did feel as though that goal was coming. Liverpool were beginning to ratchet up the pressure. Williams has the excellent chance. Salah has a chance in there as well. Yeah. You know, there's a couple of bits and pieces where they're around where they need to be on the pitch. They were turning the screw, and I think when you talk about the Anfield thing at times this season, that to me is what's sort of gone, and it's what's sort of come back from Liverpool's play, I think, in the last sort of 4 or 5 weeks. Liverpool have remembered how they turned the screw. I don't think they're doing a lot of things profoundly better, but they've worked out how to better build pressure and keep pressure on.
Yeah, and I think they also found, obviously I think Thiago's been a big part of it, but they found ways to draw teams in for the press and then get out with Robertson or with Trent. And, you know, I was saying this to someone yesterday about Phillips and Williams. You know, you think they are the least experienced and comfortable in possession out of all of Liverpool's centre-backs at the club, you know, senior centre-backs. And yet I feel like Liverpool have taken more risks with them at centre-back in possession than at any point in the season. I lost count of the amount of times yesterday where they were knocking it around the penalty area, but they always got out. They always, you know, Thiago spun or Fabinho pinged one out to Robertson, and it felt like as soon as they got out, they were away and they were running away. And I thought, you know, you can talk about Palace if you want, but we don't really need to. But I do think Palace played a little bit like they'd never seen Mo Salah and Sadio Mane play. I couldn't believe how sort of much space they were given. You know, Liverpool dropped about 4 or 5 balls down the line for Salah, and he was sort of one on one with Mitchell. And you know, you thought this is encouraging. And I actually tweeted Salah had a shot blocked where Mane had skinned someone and squared.
That's after the spin I was talking
about. Yeah. I tweeted at that moment. I said, oh, Liverpool are really pushing here, and they scored off the corner. And it was one of those where I don't know whether it was like that on TV, but in the ground it did feel like they're going to score before half time here, Liverpool. This isn't going to half time level. They are going to score, and lo and behold, they did. And after that, I don't think they were ever. I can't think of any moment really where it felt like there was any kind of tension.
There was a strangeness, I thought, Ian, just to keep doing the game in broad strokes, we'll come on to a couple of performances in a minute, but there was a strangeness, I think, second half from Palace. I think that they've got no real urgency about them to land a glove on Liverpool, and Liverpool almost don't know what to do, I think. And then there's a mini scare, and then we beat where they don't even get a shot away, but like they'd woken up a little bit, and then we go and make it two. And I thought it was really interesting that Liverpool were just able to manage that game and manage it on their terms for a long period of that second half, and at the moment where they needed to, they just went and stuck the ball in the back of the net.
Yeah, I think the second half started very much with an attitude of, let's get Mo the golden boot. And I think everybody's purpose at the start of the second half, and probably for best part of 20 minutes, was if you're going to get the ball to anyone, you're getting it to Mo. And if you're going to put the ball into anyone, you're going to put it into Mo, because we want Mo to have the golden boot, which is a laudable thing to do. But it was kind of standing there at that point going, well, could you just score the second there? And then if you want Mo to get a hat-trick, sound, do whatever you like. But if you could score the second first for us, that'd just be great. Just kill it off and then have a party. And it came to that point when it clearly... It's not that it clearly wasn't happening for Mo, but it just wasn't running as you'd want it to. So they did ratchet up a little bit more. And, you know, brilliantly, the goal comes from an assist from Mo to Sadio. So
it's a great move, that, isn't it?
It's a lovely sweeping move.
It's 1-2 he plays with Gini Wijnaldum,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a lovely... And his ball is really perfect for...
The ball across is fantastic. And it's another thing, seeing it live in front of you, end on, watching them coming towards you, you see the shape of the whole team moving towards you, which you can't see on the telly. And that's one of the big things we've massively missed this year without realising it. You don't see that on the TV. But when you see them sweeping towards it, you're looking at it going, there's no way Sadio Mane's in that much space. how can you actually... There's nobody else on that side of the pitch. What's going on? And clearly Palace weren't overly arsed about that. But it was just obvious. And as soon as he got it, it was kind of like slightly amazed. There needs to take a deflection to go in, because it looked like it could have just been, he could have placed it anywhere in the net at all.
They find their way through, I think, through a couple of performances. We'll get Neil and Ian in on Thiago, but I think there's a nice running thing I've seen from somebody put on social, which is that across the last sort of five games, somebody else has won man of the match. But you're very much of the view that Thiago was the best player on the pitch, or at the very least was the second best player on the pitch. And every single time, for instance, when against Burnley, Phillips clears one off the line, wins the big header to make it 2-0. He gets given man of the match, you understand why, but Thiago is the best player on the pitch. And I thought that was another one yesterday where, you know, Mane gets two goals, absolutely brilliant stuff. He's had such a tough season. Yeah, give him man of the match, but Thiago is the best player on the pitch.
Yeah, he has been for a few games. I felt in that phase where he was getting criticised, I thought he was just... he wasn't playing as well as he is now, but he was being scapegoated, and he was... But it was a difficult setup there. We was playing with Ginny and Curtis, and you know, he was doing everybody's legwork, really. But yeah, he is. And you can sort... And no disrespect to Ginny, but I think if you put Henderson in with Fabinho and Thiago, I think you get another level again from Thiago there. He's really going, God, just everybody's running for me here. And then he can he seems more relaxed. It seems mad that, you know, such an experienced footballer needs to regain confidence a bit. And I think he has regained confidence. You can see him getting his head up much, much more these days now than he was, say, 2 months ago. Yeah, if he can keep injury free, if we can have generally an injury free squad, if you put your best players around him, I think we will get that fantasy team that we got glimpses of for 5 minutes at the beginning. What a team that was! Yeah. You know, Chelsea and Everton. It was a half at Everton, a half at Chelsea. That was the team, the ultimate Liverpool side almost. And you can see how we could yet have it again.
Well, I think there's a point that you made a few weeks ago, Neil, that in the way the season's gone, how bad we've had it with centre backs. It's kind of hidden the fact that Gini struggled when he was playing number six.
Yeah.
So when he was playing six, Thiago didn't have the license to actually roam. He didn't have the license to express himself on the game, because there was always going to need to be that cover for Gini as well, because he was playing in a position that isn't his by nature.
It was interesting watching him spin right all the time, Neil, and I think he started to do that. Again, it'll be interesting when Gomez is back, whether or not he feels he needs to come and sort of take it, almost play right-hand side at centre-half to start possession moves, and there might be a little bit less of that. Because for me, that's his most exciting, frankly, when he's getting the ball into the final third, playing through the middle thirds and getting it into the final third. That's where he looks different class, but his appreciation of everything around him at all times, it verges on supernatural.
Yeah, it's terrific. Same at Burnley, wasn't it? It was, you know, there was so many times he just took the air out of those fans' balloon, really, where they were expecting this high press from whoever it was in midfield, Westwood or Brownhill or Goodmanson, and he's just able to just, you know, one touch or two touch, he's out of there, isn't he? And, and Liverpool are suddenly playing forward, and it brings Firmino into the game. I mean, Firmino's form, obviously this season has been discussed an awful lot, I imagine, by everyone. But you can see what will be happening when Thiago's in the side, the rest of the side's structured and Firmino's in the side, that, you know, it's Liverpool get into better positions through it because Thiago can find them, and then obviously Firmino can just pop it back or spin it around the corner. He does that better than most strikers, I think, that sort of ball where he draws in two defenders and plays it to a running midfielder coming forward. And I think, yeah, I think it bodes well. You just hope, and you know, every sort of point has to be put with this, doesn't it? That you just hope that at least they get a little run of seeing all of these players. You know, I mean, Rob said there, the Chelsea second half, Fabinho was playing centre half at Chelsea. You know, Gomez was injured that game, wasn't he? You know, or didn't play that game. Henderson, I think, went off at half time for Thiago, didn't he? I think Keita was in the side. So you do hope. I think that 7 minutes at Everton was probably the first time we saw Jürgen with a full team to pick from, and that was what he picked. He went with Thiago, Henderson, and
Keita
Fabinho.
Was in the team at the start of that season.
Yeah, he was. Yeah. That was the first. Well, I think he went off at half time at Villa, didn't he? That was sort of his run sort of came to an end there. But that team, I think, you know, with Matip or Gomez alongside Van Dijk, obviously the front three, the full backs, and then that midfield would be, yeah, you know, I'd back that to win most games, put it this way, you know, home or away. And it'd be nice to just get a little look at that for more than 7 minutes next season.
It would indeed. Within that as well, Ian, Fabinho just marked space. Neil talks there about taking the air out of the balloon. He does it in a different way, I think, with Crystal Palace throughout a lot of this game. Just whenever they were, he just almost made it too hard for them. I remember an old quote that Ronnie Whelan used to sometimes, as he ran past opponents, just ask them if it was too hard for them today. And there was elements of that, I thought, with Fabinho. Whenever Palace were trying to get up any degree of a head of steam, it was almost like he was going, you're just going to have to work so hard to get anything out of us, and you don't want to do that really, do you, boys? You just want to basically let us win.
Yeah, it just, yeah, I've got to be honest, I didn't pay a great deal of attention to Fabinho yesterday because he was just doing what he does, and he was just wherever he needs him to be. He was there, he was breaking up everything, he was getting in, he was getting his foot in, he was dragging two players around at the same time, and he was doing the dog work, basically. He was just doing all the dirty stuff, and the stuff that you don't get thanked for, that you don't notice, and to be fair, as I said, I wasn't paying a great deal of attention to him doing it because he was doing it perfectly. I was, you know, to backtrack a little bit, I was spending my day. My intention yesterday was to watch Thiago in the flesh because I'd had so much fun watching him the last 2 weeks. And for the first 20 minutes, I was like, he's not doing a good thing. Been a bit quiet. I've possibly been ruined by the fact that I saw John Barnes' first game at Anfield, and after that, nothing is going to be the same. But you're watching him going, well, he's not doing a great deal, and then all of a sudden you're looking at going, this lad's perfect. There's nothing he can't do. And there was a ball that he played from the right wing diagonally across to
Robertson,
second half, and it looked like he just played the most aimless punted cross you've ever seen in your life, and then you realise as it drops to Robertson that he's the only person in the field who realised Robertson was going to be at that point. He'd put it right on a sixpence, and there's nobody else who's got the vision to do that. He's got more space, more time on the ball than anyone I've seen since Alonso, and he's just perfect. BF being yours, quite good.
I didn't notice on the ground, but just watching on the telly, I kept spotting Gini Wijnaldum effectively in the left back position. Andy Robertson was being given a lot more license. I think it's happened in a couple of games recently. I mean, I feel one that when we came to a halt this season and our season just stalled and we stopped being able to win matches, it was because Robertson was blunted.
But because he wasn't able to link with Mane, and he clearly was yesterday.
Yeah, but they seem to be, whatever they say, they say, go 20 yards further forward, Andy. I don't care what you think. You don't be involved in the build-up. He wasn't involved in the build-up play at all. Well, from what I was seeing, again, if those in the ground might have seen something different. But every time I looked up, I thought, shit, where's Andy? There's Ginny in his position. Oh, there's Andy. I thought that was very interesting. But so it was sort of like three at the back.
Kind of. Well, one of the things that was very notable in the second half, and again, you know, without wanting to bang on about this idea, but seeing it end on and watching it, in the first half, and you probably won't come on to this in a minute, but Reece Williams, you realise how calm he is, how unflustered.
Yeah. Did a turn down the cop end, didn't he, where the whole cop went, oh, and then he just, well, he's out and
that,
out. And
that turn genuinely leads to the goal. Now, if you've only seen it on Match of the Day, you've only seen highlight reels, you don't realise that in order for us to get the ball up the field so that we can get the corner, that he heads on for Firmino to touch for Sadio to put in the back. It starts with him receiving the ball from Alisson in a really dangerous position, pirouetting and then moving up the field with it. And the lad's got that. And because he was playing left centre back with Robbo, there's clearly that responsibility and understanding that he will be able to do it. Because second half, you appreciate that they trusted Williams to be the last man in defence. Because Phillips was pushing up and Williams was the guy who was just holding at the back there. So there's a trust in the lad that maybe wasn't there 6 weeks ago.
I think there's a massive credit to be given to them too. Because I think it would be easy for Liverpool and to the manager, but I think those two deserve it as more than anyone, that it'd be easy to put them in. And we know what Nat Phillips is, and we know what people say about Nat Phillips, and say, you know, yeah, he'd be great in a Burnley, or he'd be great in a Brighton, or, you know, that type of stopper centre half. They don't play like that. They play like Liverpool centre backs play, and it's going to cause them problems, obviously. You know, there's a couple of times where, I mean, like you said, Zaha, what's Phillips meant to do? You know, he's isolated one-on-one. He's going to get skinned, isn't he? Yeah. There was a couple, I think, was at Newcastle. Was Callum Wilson did them down the line. And, but that's okay. You know, that doesn't happen if he sits deep like a Phil Jagielka or even a John Terry maybe would have done in the past, where, you know,
when you get Sammy Hoopier,
yeah, Jamie Carragher would have done that. You know, said, no, I'm not going to go engage sort of 40 yards from goal. I'll sit back. And that doesn't happen. And you can look a bit better. In, you know, you're not getting exposed, but they've been willing to take that risk and to make, you know, to risk looking silly like Reece Williams did against Rashford at Old Trafford, like Phillips has done in those examples, and also to not just lump the ball and say, well, you know, I'm in the side, I don't want to cost us a goal, there's a lot of pressure on this game, I don't want to be the reason Liverpool don't get in the Champions League. No, I'll still ping a diagonal, I'll still do a turn in my own penalty area, I'll still make an angle for Alisson. And I think they deserve loads and loads of credit for the way that, not just the way they've performed, but the manner in which they've done it and the sort of the style of play that they've performed in, especially in the last few weeks.
Because you realise yesterday how expressive Williams' passing actually is, because he's not passing to the first player, he's passing to the second man, so he's cutting out, he's actually taking the risky passes and playing the diagonals.
He can play. I've seen him in the under-18s, 23. He's a ball playing centre-back, you know, if he adjusts his level, you know, accordingly, but he can be a ball player. He's not a kick it and lump it.
We've been spoiled, I think, by Van Dijk, Matip and Gomez.
Yeah.
If we just drop, and a lot of our perceptions of the Phillips and Williams is a sort of a confirmation bias because we know their backstory, right? So we're not allowing ourselves to believe they can actually be any good. I mean, because it's a bit mad. But if we'd never had those three elite centre-backs and we just dropped in a couple of, let's call them foreign name centre-backs, and they performed like these two, you'd go, yeah, he was a bit shaky that game. But you'd go, they're okay, these two. They're now the experienced, they're okay, they're young, they're good.
Well,
they're really good.
Quebec's a good example. Yeah. Quebec has done okay, but he's not. Quebec hasn't looked like a 20 million centre back compared to those two. You know, it isn't a case where you look at them and go, well, yeah, they're not.
They're in the same class.
Yeah, they're not. They're comparable, aren't they, in terms of their performance levels, definitely.
On them, Rob, is massively sort of what happens next for the two of them. Obviously, there's more things than the obvious just to feed into that. There's a Quebec conversation, and there's also a, where do we expect Gomez, Van Dijk and Matip to come back at? And that's a sports science conversation that obviously we haven't got. And I will perhaps venture right now, the manager can't be absolutely certain about anywhere near as much as he'd like. It's the being part of this run. It's very, very strange. It reminds me a little bit of Chirivella after the Everton game, where if you'd have said to me Chirivella got an unlikely move to Barcelona, I wouldn't have thought it was that crazy. And if you said to me he was starting for Bristol City next season, I wouldn't have thought it was that crazy.
Yeah.
It is a really strange thing for the pair of them, and I think it does speak volumes of the manager and the players around them that you're now in a situation where, for the two of them, I've really got no idea what football club they'll be playing at next season, and I mean that as a compliment, not as an insult.
Yeah, it's similar to the Quebec conversation again, in as much as people go, oh, you know, Phillips has done well, Williams has done well, Quebec's done okay, we should keep them. But you go, but if those others are fit, those really impressive, talented young defenders aren't going to play any football of any serious, you know, especially if someone like Konate comes in. So it's the horns of a big dilemma. I mean, the only thing I do think in in favour of them having futures at Liverpool is, if I'm Klopp, knowing the seriousness of the injuries the main three have had, I'm counting on them as half a centre-back each. Do you know what I mean? If I'm doing a numbers game in my squad, so I'm going, I'll do well to get one and a half elite centre-backs out of
them. Is there a thing here, Rob, where we forget January exists? So from a Liverpool point of view, they can start next season, start heavy on centre-halves, and then almost have an outlook of, all right, well, then we sort it in January.
Yeah, 100%, yeah. You do that, and then you go, wow, well, you haven't played more than a League Cup game, Nat and Reece, therefore you get your loan. It's simple as, isn't it?
I think you're also, you have to factor in, Reece signed a five-year contract last summer, so Reece's long-term future is taken care of. I think you'll get a pay rise. You know, Liverpool are pretty good at that kind of thing, but there's no, I think Reece will be loaned. I think that would be the plan for him, and probably you're looking at a championship. I'd imagine, you know, let's say Blackpool come up, you know, into the championship, wouldn't be a bad pitch. Phillips has got 2 years left on his contract. I think Liverpool have to give him a new contract because it's reward, but it rewards Liverpool as well if they choose to sell him. I think you're right, spot on, Neil, about the January thing. You know, I don't think Nat Phillips and Reece Williams are going to decline in value necessarily if they don't play at all between sort of August and January. And they probably will play as well. Like, you know, they'll probably play in the League Cup, or they'll play in one of the Champions League if you can get through nice and early. So I don't think there's that great a risk in having them playing one or two games, maybe even playing for the under-23s in Reece's case at the start of next season. But yeah, long term, you have to be fair to the players, and Jürgen tends to be quite fair to players. I think probably sometimes anyway to the detriment of the actual collective. You know, he'll let a player go when you think. I remember letting Nathaniel Clyne go. Did he go one January on loan, and then he ended up with Jordan Henderson playing right back? And you think, you know, you could have just told Nathaniel Clyne to wait a week or two, and instead of, you know, being fair to him.
Minamino's
on the, yeah. You know, you could easily, I mean, Minamino would have played some games between you know, January and May now.
Probably more than he has.
Yeah. I think he started yesterday, but he hasn't really been.
Not pulled up any trees,
yeah,
has he?
Yeah, not at all, no, which, you know, that he's one of them you forget about almost, isn't he, Minamino, when everyone talks about the summer sales. But I do think, yeah, with Phillips and Williams in particular, I think, There's no rush, I don't think, to make any sort of crazy decisions. I don't think the fees would be that game changing in terms of Liverpool's plans, where you say, well, you can't turn down 40 million for Nat Phillips, you know. I don't think that's going to be happening.
So you're not shifting wages out either.
Yeah, exactly. Well, exactly. I think Phillips would be not far above
200 quid a week.
An under 23's sort of salary. Yeah. You know, probably what Liverpool tend to do with the salaries is, so you can judge what they'd be on by where they've been. So Reece Williams' salary would be an under-23s player who's been in the conference, and it's probably now gone up last summer. Whereas Phillips would be a Bundesliga 2 player, which is where he was last season at Stuttgart. So that's not game-changing for Liverpool, you know. Yeah. And I think both of them will be rewarded, but I think both of them would probably, I expect, to do the whole pre-season with Liverpool at the very least. I don't think they'll be shipped out immediately. I don't think it'll be a case of striking while the iron's hot and getting them out the door.
No, should go to the Euros.
Both of them in the Euros.
Because you could take 26 or send them.
Yeah, Trent looking at them thinking, have you got in?
I think you've got to be realistic, though, about the injuries, because you look at the way that Chamberlain's not come back from serious injuries for 3 years now. And we've got three of them, and also Gomez and Matip have always been susceptible
to injuries. Gomez had bad ones,
he's had really bad ones. I think this was his third really serious injury.
He's had an ACL, a broken leg, and now he's had ankle surgery as well.
He did when he got done at Burnley that time.
So the idea of keeping these two, even if we buy Canales and ends up with Phillips and Williams being fifth and sixth choice, we may well need fifth and sixth choice for rotation.
Looking at yesterday, Ian, we mentioned Thiago, and Neil mentioned him getting the best out of Firmino. It looked to me like Firmino was very much on it, again, across the 90. Of all the front three, really, and that Salah does some remarkable things, and you forget, you almost take him for granted at times how incredible he is. Mane gets the couple of goals, which grabs the attention, but I really did feel as though in the middle of all of that, Firmino was knitting it up very, very nicely indeed.
He was, yeah. I mean, Mane, I think, did more than just get the couple of goals, because I was really happy with the way that Mane came back yesterday, and he was showing a lot of the best. I mean, you kind of saw it in the last couple of games, little glimpses, but he really lifted him. For me, what genuinely was man of the match, possibly skewed by the fact I was just delighted that he was playing well again. But Firmino was involved all over the place, and yeah, he's just that endless creativity. And we talked about it so many times, he's a player who needs a crowd. He's a performer. He wants his name sung. He wants people to know how good he is. And I think that's very much what he's missed the entire year, because you did see the Firmino that we know we can see all the time.
He was showing off towards the end when he's down the cough end. He played the pass with his back, and then he was trying some mad spin in the penalty area, wasn't he? But that's a good sign, isn't it?
Yeah, again, he's taking ridiculous chances, because it was kind of like heading onto his shoulder but doing it in a way that was intended, and he was pulling out clever things, and he hasn't done that all season. He's obviously been a shadow of himself, but then, you know, so many footballers have. But he clearly is one. He's such a showman. He wants people to see what he can do. So he was back into it again. He was a fulcrum again.
What I think is interesting with him, Rob, where I actually think there's lots of ways in which some players you judge the confidence, especially attackers, given, you know, what they excel in. And the obvious one is always obviously in front of goal. With Firmino, that's not the thing I sort of look for. The thing I look for is how much is he trying to carry you. And I think that you got to see that yesterday. He goes on a couple of, he tries to have a couple of runs in there as well. I always remember, you know, he scores a great goal against Arsenal in that 5-1 where he gets a hat-trick, where he picks it up and just goes past two, surges past them, like they're not even there, and then drills it. I think it's interesting. I think what you've seen in the last few weeks, and you see more of it against Palace as well, is him just picking the ball up and thinking, no, I can carry this, I can go and beat a man. And I think that whilst he's not a pacey, wide player like the other two, that's his marker for me of when you feel like he's on it and he fancies himself.
Yes, I do like, I would combine that with saying I like to see him get shots away. He's a forward and he does thrive on that. You know, it's notable he's there when Mane scores the goal. He just gets the touch beforehand. I think if you're talking about peak Firmino, you saw more of it against Burnley, I think, to be honest with you. You want to see him arrive in between the posts. He's got so much to his game, hasn't he? I do think we have seen enough in the last month or so to say, again, we add the crowd factor in, which, do you know what, even if it's not true what effect the crowd's had on the likes of Firmino, it's suitable that everyone thinks it is, because I think he'll choose to believe that, and I think we'll see him push on again next season. I'm expecting him to have a good season and to have rehabilitated himself in this phase.
Sadly, you can just take for granted at times, Neil. And he frustrates a little bit. Gaeta makes a great save from him late, and I think we've got to say that. I think it's a really, really good effort. It's in the corner. He gets the one-on-one early. So it's very, very strange to say it about Liverpool's top scorer and the lad who is, you know, undoubtedly Liverpool's best attacker, if not just best player. It's only really Alcantara that's challenging him for that at the moment. And it's been Salah for years. But he does feel sort of, when he doesn't score, you feel as though he can come away from some games a little bit underappreciated. I thought he was just terrific throughout. Yeah. His battling on top of everything else that he's got, all of his quality, I thought he was different class.
Yeah, I thought. Go back to United the way I thought it was one of Salah's best performances for Liverpool.
Yeah,
from start to finish, it was just, you know, there was a bit of I think a few people were saying sort of Luke Shaw's handled Salah pretty well in a lot of games that he's played against him. You know, he has a great record against United and that kind of thing. And I thought he was just bristled with danger and threat and intent, and he does that a lot. You know, you come away and you sort of, he's a little bit scruffy sometimes, isn't he, when, you know, there's a chance that gets pulled back to him and you think just hit it first time, and he takes a touch and ends up sort of a bit of the keeper like shovels it behind off a deflection, and you think, you know, you sort of just want to see him just throw his foot around it. But then you also think, well, hang on, West Brom a week ago, a quarter of a chance, and he just put it in off the post. You know, you think of other goals. He won the goal of the month the first 6 months of the season for Liverpool. So he's obviously not that scruffy, is he? If he's doing that, you know, he's just I think he's just, people aren't used to the amount of involvement and danger and threat and chances that he gets. So people now want to see him take every single one. And no, he scored.
Do you think he's become a better instinctive finisher, but maybe not calmer?
Yeah, I think he's become a better. He's got that. He's really nailed, hasn't he? That sort of Arjen Robben sort of angle, almost a Thierry Henry, but mirrored into the far corner. Maybe he's maybe lost, sort of he's not getting as many of those sort of 6 yard block pullback first time sort of tap ins that we saw him getting in the first season. He's getting more of the good goals, if you like, than the scruffy ones. But I He's just one of them. He's so weird. I heard Micah Richards on Jamie Carragher's podcast. Sorry, I listened to another podcast.
We know that they exist.
Yeah, I know. But I listened to him, and they asked him. He was a Fiorentina with Salah, and he said, did you expect him to go on and be amazing? And he said, yeah. He said, but I thought he'd be a winger. He said, I'd never have said he'd score you 30 goals a season. He said, because he can't really shoot. That's all Richard said. He said he was just, you know, he wouldn't hit the ball cleanly, or he wouldn't do this. He said, I knew he'd be a top player because he was just strong and quick and you know, really, really direct. But it's incredible what he's become, really, isn't it? You know, as a goal scorer that people think wastes too many chances.
Well, if you look at his goals, where do we get? We buy from Roma, don't we? Yeah. He scores 16, I think, in that season. But what was interesting about them is there aren't many great shots in that. They're all six-yard box poacher goals. And when he first arrives, he's getting quite a few of them. There's quite a lot of little back post headers, tap-ins.
Yeah.
But what he gained, because the goals kept coming, he just got the confidence. Yeah. You saw it with Suarez, by the way, as well. The Suarez as a finisher in his last
Suarez
season.
Suarez was grabbing the first, wasn't he?
He was 10 times the finisher in his last season, just through confidence. Yeah. It's incredible, that phenomenon.
Yeah.
Person to talk about him becomes Wijnaldum, Liverpool sign him in the summer of 2016. I want to say I am right about that, aren't I? Yes,
yeah,
I am right about that.
Yeah.
He's gone all the way through to 2021. He will be leaving on a free transfer from a Liverpool point of view. It is sad to see him go. Ultimately, you know, he's been around for what can be referred to as glory years and can be called an absolutely fantastic journey. And he's not just been around, he's been the player who's got on the pitch most during all of those seasons. He's played his part for the club incredibly well, and it is very, very sad that he's leaving.
It is. He's much more than played his part for the club. He's been a fantastic servant. And it was kind of, I mean, there are lots of things that incense me about Twitter, but one of the things that incense me about Twitter the other day was when people started talking about being possibly Genie's final game, there were people saying, good, get out of my club. It's kind of like, it's not your club. You've never, ever seen this player play in the flesh. I mean, there's nothing wrong with not seeing the player play in the flesh. There'll be a lot of people listening who don't get the opportunity like we do to watch him play in the flesh. But he is like a Ronnie Whelan. He's one of those players that people don't necessarily appreciate exactly what he does. And what he did yesterday again was, I'm going to take this game by the scruff of the neck, and I'm going to pirouette through five players in the middle of the field, and I'm going to start getting the ball forward. I'm going to make things happen. For the big games he's played, and I was listening to you on the Pink on the way in, the big games he's played, he's influenced those big games, and that's a hell of a thing to do in any player. It's not like he's influenced one big game or he's had one night that was absolutely majestic. He's done it time and time again. And anybody who disrespects, I hate to use the word disrespect, that's another Twitter thing, but anybody who doesn't respect and doesn't appreciate what Gini Wijnaldum has done for Liverpool doesn't understand the game. It's quite simple for me, that it's obvious how good he is, and he's one of those players who will always take control. He'll never hide. He's had a handful of bad games in 5 years.
Yeah, he's been the most used player when it was good, and the most used player when it was bad. So yeah. He's been there at the heart of everything. He's played
and changed his game.
He's played number 6, number 8, number 10, number 9 in the new camp. He's played left side of centre half,
Brighton.
Yeah, he's captain the team. He scored in two European Cup semi-finals. He scored in a Merseyside derby. He's, you know, he scored against Manchester City. He scored against Chelsea, Arsenal. I mean, what more do you want, really, from a signing that I wouldn't have made? I don't think anyone was calling for it when he signed. You were?
In fact, I had an argument with Mel Reddy about it because I did a Gotta Show on it. And I
this
said,
was before he signed, yeah?
Yeah. Well, there'd been some very spurious rumour a couple of months before.
Right, okay, yeah.
We'd been linked to Sissoko and Wijnaldum were both at Newcastle.
Well, yeah, who'd you rather have had?
I like Gini Wijnaldum because he scored goals at Newcastle from midfield. He scored like 10, I think.
Yeah.
And he scored like 4 in one game.
And he got relegated to near.
Yeah. And I thought, I mean, you know, it's a fairly fucking frivolous admiration at that stage. But I said, I think there's something in this one. I think he's the sort of player we'd go for. And Mel went, absolutely no chance. She was very sort of like, Liverpool don't buy players at that level. They're much sharper than that. And then, well, she won't have it, in a, by the way.
It's a shame it's so hard to search on our app.
I know.
But okay, well, no one called for the sign except for Rob.
The award-winning Gutter sign. Gutter wins awards.
It's not easy.
But, you know, you sort of... Again, you're talking about the story, don't you? The story of a player at Liverpool. And also, I think the biggest the biggest thing, you can't underestimate. The reason players become legends at Liverpool, and Ronnie, you've just used Ronnie Whelan, it's not because of, the reason is, A, big moments, and two, loads and loads of games. And Gini Wijnaldum played 237 in 5 years, which is
unreal,
incredible in this era. So how can he not be a legend and win things, sorry, as well, you know, big moments and winning things. He ticks every box for me. And I put a thing out yesterday on Twitter saying Liverpool legend, that I don't tend to look at too many comments, but you can see the top two underneath, and one was absolutely 100% he's a legend, and the one underneath, no chance on earth he's a legend, which, you know, I know which one I'm, I know which camp I'm in that regards.
It's so many big goals, Rob. I mean, even like, for instance, here's an example of one that I've just double checked because your mind plays tricks. He scores against Atletico. Yeah. Last season, you know what I mean? He pops up there to get
that goal,
and we need that goal, and he pops up and gets that one. Now that one, because we don't go on and win the game, it's one that, as I say, your mind plays tricks, you forget. But even his mundane contributions in front of goal, Sheffield United 1-0, everyone forgets what that felt like at the end of September. We needed to win that day.
Yeah.
You know, we were all convincing ourselves we were on the march, and we'd struggled a little bit, we missed some big chances, and then Gini pops up. And is it scruffy from the keeper? Absolutely it is. But it doesn't matter, in that, you know, you've still got to be there to do it, and he makes it happen. And there's a bit of, I always think it's interesting now when you talk about 1920, is that everyone acts as though, well, that league was always in the bag. Those early games were really fraught. And again, when Alden was there for all of them, you go right the way through. There's the opening goal against Cardiff.
Yeah, I was just thinking, exactly.
That's a mundane game.
Yeah. The Middlesbrough goal,
theoretically mundane. He bangs that
Roma,
one in.
Roma away,
which we needed in the end. The thing about all of these, Rob, is that you can end up saying that there's not that many goals. The really strange thing is, it almost reminds me a little bit of Dirk Kuyt, in terms of, it does not feel like a lot of the goals. Could there have been more of them? Yes. Maybe even should there be more of them?
Yeah.
Quite possibly there should be, but they're all significant. Very, very few of them are. For instance, he scores a really good goal to make it 2-0 against Bournemouth in the February of 2019. It's a really good goal, don't get me wrong. It makes it 2-0, but that's a bit of a, well, we were going to beat Bournemouth that day anyway.
He had diarrhea that day, though, didn't he? That was when Klopp said he basically just told his press conference that he had the shits.
Yeah. But
which is the goal he scores from the edge of the box this season before Christmas? It was a hell of a goal.
Well, I'll come back to you on
it's
that
on
one.
The break.
But he scores. He scores Wolves. In 18 Wolves. He scores in 2018. Rob, the opening goal at Tottenham. Back when Tottenham was a big thing that we were scared of. Tottenham
was at Wembley, wasn't it?
At Wembley, the season before they beat us 4-1. Up pops Gini, opens the score, and 1-0 Liverpool. And we go from there. They're all significant, and that's the mad thing.
What's the diagonal chip across the keeper?
I think that one might be Bournemouth.
Sounds glorious.
He's been our, I mean, in the Klopp era, it's been a common mantra, a complaint of sorts, that we don't score goals from midfield. He has been our goals from midfield in this era because no other bug has been scoring them from midfield.
They're game-breaking goals from midfield.
They are. I think one of the reasons they come in those kind of games is because that's when Klopp's playing his most, not workmanlike, but most battling midfield, most compact midfield. So therefore, he gets the number eight roles. Whereas, say, you're playing a Naby Keita or a Curtis Jones, he's not quite got that license. So it's not entirely a coincidence. Having said that, Jesus Christ, they're all really, really good finishes. They're really tight games with chances. I tell you what, but amidst all this sort of, like, let's remember Gini like he's dead, sort of emotion that's outpouring, what's stuck with me is, it's now, we've speculated on this now for 14, 15 months. He's leaving Liverpool now. This is my biggest takeaway from all this. Not, wasn't he great? Of course he was fucking great. They're all legends who played in our league winning side and our European Cup winning side. I hate the word legend, by the way.
And our world club championship.
It's subjective, but if you're going to give it, you're going to allow them to give speeches in corporate hospitality lounges in the future as a legend. You're a legend if you've played that, you know, if you've played in those, for those minor things. So let's park that silliness to a degree. Liverpool are letting go a player who is an essential cog in the machine, who scores all those goals, plays all those games, and it's now a fact, not speculation. Liverpool better have a fucking plan. In fact, I think I wouldn't be surprised if they announce it within a couple of weeks that they've got someone.
I think the other takeaway is he did basically say, I don't want to go. He said in his interview, he said, I wanted to stay many more years, and unfortunately that didn't happen. And I think he said in his post, the fans need to know the true story, which there's only one takeaway from that, isn't it, that Liverpool
didn't want to pay him
what he thinks he's worth. And
that also means they must have a replacement,
exactly,
got to, otherwise it's
that has to, it has to, doesn't it? You know, As much as I rate all three of them on the best, Curtis Jones and Ox and KZ, there's no way Liverpool are going to go into next season and bank on the three that we mentioned, Henderson, Fabinho and Thiago, and then those three as backup.
So, Neil, do you think that they should have made them an offer? I think it's a really interesting, complex conversation.
Yeah, it is. It's a real modern problem, isn't it, that Liverpool got themselves into, where you build a great side with a lot of room to develop and a lot of years to come, and then all of a sudden, almost before you blink, the years have gone, haven't they? And you're sort of in the stage where it's like, right, all these players, and there's a lot more of them to come in the next 2 years, isn't there? That all these players, we've got to make a decision on how long do we ring them, and then what do we do with them when we don't feel like we can ring them anymore?
He's 31 in November.
Yeah, I think Genie's style and professionalism, I think, would have justified another contract.
It's a bold move.
Would I have said them to make him one of the club's highest earners, which is possibly what he might have been looking for? Maybe not. I mean, you've got, Thiago and Van Dijk and Salah and Mane and Henderson and people like that, Alisson. But I still think Liverpool, I don't think it's a nice...
Are you surprised
that he goes on a free?
Are you surprised, Neil, there wasn't... I almost put the free thing to one side. The one thing that sort of does surprise me off the noises and off the general sort of life situation we've all found ourselves in, the thing that surprises me, Neil, is that people didn't manage to get together on a one-year extension. That's the thing I'm sort of slightly surprised about. And that might well be because, maybe that just doesn't suit Genie at this point, where he wants the one more bumper contract, because I'm saying he's 31 in November. If we were having this 12 months on, I'd be saying, and he's 32 in November. And then that might be difficult to be able to orchestrate the deal where you go on to 200 grand a week or something like that. But the one thing that sort of hit me with this, and it's hit me all the way through, there was 10,000, I'm pleased Ian was in, I'm pleased people were in, but we haven't got to say goodbye to Genie, and we didn't get to say goodbye to Dejan, and we didn't get to say goodbye to Lallana. And it just strikes me as a little bit sad, and I did wonder whether or not there might have been a way to sort of say to Wijnaldum and Funal, and to say to Liverpool, let's agree a 1 year extension, I'll get to play back in front of all the people, and hopefully it ends on an open top bus.
Yeah, possibly. Yeah, I mean, that would have been an unusual sort of
change. That's his age, isn't it?
For football. I mean, you could have said, just sign a new contract and the gentleman's agreement is we'll sell you after the year. You could do it that way, couldn't you? Where it's not as overtly a 1 year deal. But I don't know, maybe. Genie's suggesting there, and the way that the whole squad and the manager in particular have treated them suggests that there's no sort of like hint that Genie's done the club over in any way, shape or form. Obviously he's done well for the club, but there's no sort of suggestion of like, he could have stayed if he wanted to, but he's chosen to go elsewhere. And Genie made the point, I think, himself, saying, I haven't signed anywhere yet, which I think I believe him, to be honest. I think he's probably still got a few options there. So, I just think it's a bit sad to lose someone like that in such a low-key way. I think he deserved to go with a bit of a blaze of glory, but also Liverpool getting the money back on him a little bit, or even just getting some recognition of his worth.
Would
I have let him go?
Yeah, would you?
No, I'd want another 2 years. I've been watching him yesterday. He's still got a couple of years in his legs. He doesn't look like a player who's about to fall off the edge, and hasn't done for a long time, even though the middle of the season has probably been the weakest he's been. But he was playing in a position he shouldn't have been. But one of the privileges of being there yesterday was to be able to say goodbye to him and pay tribute to him. And, subbing him on 75 made perfect sense, because he got the acclaim that he deserved. And I don't know if it was shown on TV. I imagine everyone saw him hugged by Thiago as he was leaving the pitch, then hugged by Klopp on the touchline. But then he walked up through the subs bench and was hugged by every single player on that bench, all the way up through, whatever the 10 rows is at the moment. So you saw the affection that everybody around him has for him. He's obviously just been a very honest, very decent player, somebody who everybody's enjoyed playing with, no one's got a bad feeling about. And him going, we must have an answer, we must have something ready, because if we haven't, it's just a mystifying decision.
Would you have done him another one?
Would I have kept... With the information I have, I'd have kept him, but I don't have the information they have. I mean, I'm surmising it. I'm not, it's not so much what I'd rather look at what I think is going to happen rather than what I think. Yeah. So I, with Klopp, he was very warm in his tribute to him. He clearly knew it's been coming. He thought about how he will miss him as a human being, but there wasn't a hint of resentment. It wasn't like he went to the board and said, "Please, mate, give him what he wants." It wasn't like that's gone on. I think all behind the scenes have gone, on balance, we've got a better option. What we don't know as fans, what that better option is. Now, you know what? We're only focused on losing, on the sentimentality of losing, and the practicality of losing a really, really important player. But I hate to use the phrase, no room for sentiment in winning teams, but there isn't really. Mm-hmm. No. You do have to go onwards and upwards.
Have to renovate them at some point. Yeah. We even talk, yeah. It's interesting, you know, what Neil says there about Keita and Oxlade-Chamberlain, and I agree with him, and I don't want to see either of them go anywhere in the summer. But Keita's 26 and Chamberlain's 27, and you're talking about them like they're the younger option. So Curtis is 20, but the other two, they haven't got a lot of miles in the legs, and that's a bit of an issue in a couple of ways. But they are 26 and 27 before you get to Fabinho, before you get to Henderson, before you get to Thiago. You know, you have got to renovate that winning team if you want it to keep winning.
Yes, you do. You do. I mean, we don't know. I mean, Chamberlain and Keita might be unofficially on the market for all we know. Milner, he's a real unsung hero of this season, by the way, if we're talking about unsung heroes. Season it hasn't really had obvious heroes, but he is definitely one for me. But he's also another year older.
Yep.
I still think he'll play against Liverpool next season, but I wouldn't be surprised. Liverpool could have identified two midfield players, one who they think they want to will play virtually every week and one who might be a project, and might be looking at that and going, does that go for those two, commit to those two, invest in them, or invest in a big contract for Gini Wijnaldum? What do we want to do? We've probably only got another year of peak Gini left. So I don't know. I mean, you know, this might be one where, but in a month or two's time when we're doing the award-winning gutter transfer speculation show, if you don't subscribe to the Anfield Wrap, you should do. We might be going, we said, how the fuck can they not have someone lined up? And maybe they haven't. But I would just say the only precedent for this, and it's not quite the same thing, is when Emre Can was allowed to run down his contract and played in the very last game of that season in the European Cup final.
At the point where we were so caught talking about Emre as being a Rolls-Royce player.
Yeah, well, he certainly was a midfield player, was getting a lot of games for Liverpool at that point. But within a week of him going in that European Cup final, we'd signed Fabinho. Yeah. So I'm hoping history repeats itself.
And in fairness, we're both old enough to have seen much bigger names than Gini Wijnaldum move on and the club survived.
I saw Jimmy Case, Terry McDermott.
Yeah. I think the main thing that they've got to replace is availability, isn't it? You know,
yeah.
It would be crazy of Liverpool to sign a player that doesn't have a history of playing an awful lot of games. Of
and energy as well.
Yeah, and possibly playing in two or three different midfield roles as well, because that's what you're losing with Gini. You're losing someone who, when everyone else has hamstrings twanged, he's still there running. You know, whether it's in deepest midfielder or the furthest forward.
Okay. With Champions League football, they've done absolutely brilliantly. I'll come back to you, Neil, you know, not least to have that conversation around the recruitment of those players. We will talk about it a lot in the Anfield Wrap, as Rob says, over the summer, and people should subscribe if they get the opportunity to do so. We're doing a gutted on Wednesday. It'll be out on Wednesday as well, just for listeners there. That will be happening quick, and we'll be ratcheting up quite quickly to 2.5 a week is the way in which it's going to end up being.
Wow.
Some weeks there'll be two, some weeks there'll be three. We're just going to sort of, we're not going to have regular slots. We're going to move it around a little bit, and Rob will even be stepping in to do that when he is in his Portuguese paradise, going to come through for us there and do the business. So they've got the Champions League football, Neil. So the money, obviously, yes, that's a thing, but also being able to offer any footballer who wants to come and play for Liverpool the opportunity to not just play in the biggest competition on the planet, but also to have a really strong chance, always being, I think, the top four or top six likely winners of the Champions League. Liverpool at the minute, they haven't quite got the pick of the market, but they've got what they wanted. They've got what those players will have wanted as well. They've got another year to play in Champions League.
Yeah, they have, yeah. I don't personally think missing out on the Champions League would have affected the summer plans
much,
because I mean the sort of word from inside, obviously, with there was the Redbird investment was always that's going to enable it to be sort of business as usual.
Is that a euphemism for, do you think? I mean, I'm getting
business as usual.
Yeah, by what did Liverpool mean?
I think it means, like, you know, it sort of probably without it, and I don't think they ever thought that they would be without it. You know, but without it, they had a reason to say, well, we can't buy anyone this summer. You know, like, we've just lost £46 million and there's more to come. But I think that means that, you know, we can sort of say, well, no, you know, this summer won't be too much different to what we've become used to with Liverpool.
Don't buy
anyone. So, yeah, well, which, by the way, I was going to say, I can hear people slapping the table there saying, oh, God's sake, same as summer as usual. Mm. But you know, remember, they did buy Jota and Thiago, which were two pretty costly and exciting signings. Last summer, Tsimikas, a forgotten man, but was a signing that everyone would have said was a good signing because it was in a position that you thought Liverpool needed. You had to sign a left back last summer, and as it turns out, they signed one who basically hasn't played.
I remember that conversation.
Came on at Burnley, didn't he? I only found out the day after that someone said, oh, Tsimikas came on, didn't he, in the last minute.
There was a slight debate there. Should we buy a... Do you think we need a left back more or a reserve centre back more?
Yeah.
And most people, I think Ian Doyle at the Echo where he went mad and went, they need a centre back, this is insane.
Yeah, yeah.
And most people, I think left back's a bit more important. Yeah. You've got no cover
for that. I mean, Lloyd Kelly was one of the players he wanted.
Ben White.
But Lloyd Kelly plays all three of the defensive positions, and you think that probably would have saved a few headaches.
Kiana Herver would have had 40 appearances.
The captain this season. But I think I don't think the Champions League would have affected it that much. What I think it affects is the mood of the club, and I think it puts pressure on the season as soon as you start because you think we're in the Europa League.
Yeah.
So there's going to be weeks where they're playing catch up, where everyone's won on the Saturday. Liverpool have got a sort of nondescript 2 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday against Burnley at home, and they've had a trip to Shakhtar Donetsk on a Thursday, and you think, do without this one. I think it affects the whole mood of the season, and you've seen it with Arsenal, how long were Arsenal in the Champions League, where they were never going to drop out, and it was never enough for them to just be there. And as soon as they drop out, look at Arsenal now. Arsenal, the ultimate sort of middle of the road sort of Europa League club, aren't that's where you feel like they belong, and it wasn't that long ago that they didn't. So I think that's the biggest boost, is that you go in with a bit of momentum from the end of this season, you go in still with that excitement to come before Christmas with all those group games, those hopefully with fans inside Anfield, hopefully with more than 10,000 fans, fingers crossed, and you've got that mood and that momentum that was lost, wasn't it, for 3 months, 4 months, where you thought, oh God, what's it going to be like next season going to... It wasn't even the Europa League, was it? It was the whatever this Conference League is. Mm. You got, and that was at Tottenham.
Tottenham, yeah. Probably, yeah.
There you go. You will see. Watch Tottenham next season, whoever they get as manager, you watch the mood around those games where it'll just be... It won't be fun for them for the first half of that season because of where they are, and Liverpool have avoided that.
It's huge for them, Ian. It's a massive achievement. It's worth saying it's a massive achievement. It's the minimum requirement, and the manager's been very frank about that in the past, but it's a massive achievement. And I think that's to have pulled it out the way in which they have. Firstly, now they've all got an experience of a running together, another running. They've shown they can do another running. Last 10 games, Liverpool win 8 and draw 2. That's title-winning form in most seasons for your last 10 games. It shows what they're capable of, and they've had all different types of opponents across those 10 games as well. It hasn't all been easy, and they've pulled it out the fire.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy running by any stretch of the imagination, even after winning the way United... You were looking at the last few games going, these still aren't easy games. These are the games we struggled in all season. And to put together that run, there were stats yesterday, the first third of the season and the last third of the season, we win the league.
90 points, wasn't it? It was Christian Walsh put up, didn't he? 90 points, if you take out that.
If you take out the middle bit. And turn it into a sensible run. So it's literally that middle bit where we had lost all our centre backs and we were trying to find the balance. And the lads who ended up playing centre-back clearly weren't ready yet. That's what's cost us being higher than we already are. And the fact that we managed to stop scoring goals, that's all about the structure of the team. So it's just that centre bit. So the fact that we come back at the end with this run that we've had, which, as I said earlier, I sat here 3 weeks ago going, we're going to finish eighth. Let's not be ridiculous now. We're going to finish eighth. There's no way we're finishing in the top four. And they've done that at a time when, we lost six on the bounce at home. But then, at the end of the season, we win 8 and draw 2 in what was a difficult run-in. It's not been an easy thing to do. It's been a skeleton squad.
3 out of 14 they won between the 19th of December and the 15th of March.
The interesting thing is, in that nightmare run, which was pure relegation form, by the way, that's why, is we weren't as bad as that points total suggests.
No.
We were, we finished the thing just off 70 points in third place behind a team that's won on 86. I think we've had a perfect storm.
Let's remember, they've got 13 points less than we had last season. Yeah. Let's not talk about them as world conquering.
But even notwithstanding the circumstances, like the injuries, we've had a perfect storm of bad luck within games. You know, Leicester being
a great example. Wouldn't it? That 1-1 with 15 to go.
And some of the VAR things. Just in terms of not whether they're right or not, just in how you can expect your luck, the things to fall for you. And that's without even taking the vicious cycle that ensues when it goes against you.
Well, the derby. If you take away the fact that you've got a season-ending and an almost season-ending injury in the same game, you've got that VAR that takes away 2 points in the last minute.
Well, this is what I'm saying. So I think with a normal rub of the green, without actually saying that you accrue things, and this is a very philosophical, theoretical way of looking at it, but I think Liverpool could have quite comfortably, despite all the setbacks, finished mid to late 70s in points, which you go, that's a title defence whereby the other team just overtake you again. It's not a disaster. Yeah. What we can sort of put to bed is this has been the most comprehensively abominable title defence ever. But that, we've slain that horrible little spectre, I think.
But there's also a great great tweet last night that was sent to Andrew Beasley. I can't remember who tweeted it. But over the last three seasons, ourselves and City, 265 points each.
Yep. No, it is a very interesting one, that one, and let it all be on the line next season, and I think it will be. I think it's a massive summer for the club, but I think that next season it will be Liverpool and City absolutely going at one another from the outset. I think that one of the missed results yesterday, in amongst all the chaos, was that Chelsea have yet again shown a bit of vulnerability there, I think quite markedly, which is interesting on the road at somewhere like Villa. And don't get me wrong, Villa beat us 7-2 early in the season when we had a lot of fit players. The point is that this idea that Chelsea are going to be all conquering, I think, is up in the air.
They're lucky to be in the Champions League morning.
People will give Brendan a lot, won't they, you know, and say, oh, again, Leicester, but
no.
You know, Chelsea, the position they gave up, or very, very nearly gave up, you know,
that's choking what they've done in this last. They
lost to West Brom at home, lost to Arsenal at home, and they lost to Villa away, and lost the final.
Yeah, I don't like the expression, but it is caught. That's a choking football term for a big club.
You'd be worried about going into the final now, wouldn't you?
Especially the goalie. The goalie got a knock as well yesterday, didn't he?
He did indeed. They had to have Kepa in goal. And as everyone knows, if you just kick the ball in the top corner, you can't save it. It's like a rule. not to do down Yuri Tillemans. Leicester got what they came for. Chelsea managed to hang on for dear life, but the mighty boys in red came third. Because Liverpool are, at worst, the second best team in the country. Next season they'll show it. There'll be some improvements through the summer from the Reds, I'm sure. And we'll be there every league and Champions League game. What's up, Neil?
Can I just give a shout out? Obviously the FA Youth Cup final tonight.
Tonight. It's been moved really weirdly dead for
Aston
the past,
Villa, yeah, away. 4,000 fans. I'm heading down there this afternoon.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, great. I mean, you know,
it's good ground, isn't it?
Good I've been to see Liverpool get beat 7-2, I've been to see them play kids in the cup, and now kids are gonna play kids as well tonight, so yeah, it should be good. But great chance for Liverpool to finish the season with a trophy. Obviously didn't win it for many years, and chance to win it second time in 3 years. They've got some good players there. So should be a good game. I think it's on BT tonight, so give it a watch.
It is on BT. Do check it out. It is tonight, Liverpool against Villa. Thank you very much indeed to Neil, to Rob and to Ian. It's been a long, long road. Thanks to everyone who has contributed. All the obvious stuff that we do every season, we will be doing transfer committee games, season reviews, all the bits and bobs. We'll be doing them. We'll be doing them pretty quickly. And we've got a big week that looks back on 2001 on audio and video. That is to come as well. Do subscribe to the Anfield Wrap if you haven't had a chance to do so yet. You can download the app and do subscribe. It's theanfieldwrap.com/subscribe. Do check it all out and go from there. Liverpool have hung on to their Champions League status, and what that means is that they can go and win the thing next year. Sports Social Podcast Network.